private recording from Cisco Norma entitled Pat's Trick. That was written by Stan Patrick, who was featured on piano, Bob Rudd on bass, Andre Perry on drums, Fred Hamilton. Excuse me, I have this private recording and it's written in Cisco's handwriting, and he's put these little icons next to everything to explain who's on the tracks. Stan Patrick piano, Bob Rudd bass, Fred Hamilton bass. No, that's not right. I'll have to excuse my ineptitude on this track. Can't get that. It's not unclear. I'm sorry. The reason I played that, though, is Cisco was a very, very tight friend of Len's, and he passed last year, and it was difficult. I think Len felt that was really a hard one to get past, and so I managed to get a hold of someone who had some of these recordings, and I just wanted to get that one track in. But he's quite talented, Cisco. I mean, he played keyboards, he played drums, he did everything. Again, I'm very sorry about not being able to give you the proper track listing here, but it's not quite clear. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. My name is Drew Duncan. I'm here with co-host Mike Chamberlain. This is edition 737 of Len's Den, a tribute to Len Dobbin. It's 3:05. And we have some live music for you.
Yeah, as promised, we have Joel Miller and Christine Jensen and Dave Rishpan. And Joel was telling a story. Maybe you could set it up for us, Joel. What are you going to do?
Well, I had a show at Upstairs, and I can't remember exactly the occasion, but I prepared a bunch of music for the show, and I learned this song off of a tape that I had, and I didn't actually have the composer or any information about the band, but I really loved this song, and I prepared it to play it at Upstairs, and it's funny now thinking about it, because it seems like I was almost just wanting to get an answer from Len, but anyway, we performed this song at Upstairs, and afterwards I announced it, and I said the title, and then I just put the question out there. I don't actually know the composer, and Len was in the audience, and well, he was in his chair that he always sat in at Upstairs, and he said, "It's by Tom Jones." and all of us sort of looked at each other, okay, Tom Jones, and then we just continued on. So I brought this chart here today, I figured we would play it. And
you did confirm this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Even though you were questioning the authority.
To confirm the Len's composer. And anyway, I as Dave Rishpan.
Why are you
just
saying you
out,
don't trust Len?
Well, Tom Jones, come on. Well, when you hear it, you won't think Tom Jones.
Okay.
But Dave Rishpan confirmed, and he went on to iTunes or. I can't remember exactly where, and yes, in fact, it is Tom Jones who composed this piece. But as Dave mentioned, and it's quite interesting that we have to go and check out and read somewhere, who this is. But Len knew instantly just by hearing it, who it was, and I thought it was Count Basie or Duke Ellington. That's what I wrote on the chart. But
it's a
pretty song, and it's called "Soon It's Gonna Rain."
Ready? Thank you.
beautiful. Thank you very much. That's a nice story. I like that you questioned authority. That's the Jazz Police, you know. I mean, why wouldn't it be Tom Jones? But it, I mean, I would be the last person I would think of.
Dare I say that was kind of unusual for a Tom Jones song.
I bet he's never heard it with a melodica. Thank you very much for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Wonderful. We have a Pepper Adams track to play here, and it's dedicated to Len. And Pepper, of course, being probably Len's, you know, closest friend in terms of musicians. So let's just listen to this, and then we'll be back with DJ Andy Williams, who has given up his time in this slot for us to share this memorial tribute to Len.
That is the track Dobbin by Pepper Adams from the album Conjuration Fat Tuesday Session, recorded in August of 1983 at Fat Tuesdays in New York City with Pepper Adams, the man who wrote that piece, for Len Dobbin on baritone saxophone, Kenny Wheeler on trumpet, Hank Jones on piano, Clint Houston on bass, and Lewis Hayes on drums. It's 3:15, and we've got about another 45 minutes on the 737th edition of Dobbin's Den. I'm Mike Chamberlain with Drew Duncan, and we've got a
that
few more
a totally
guests.
Dobbin track.
Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of distills all the elements that Len was, that sound. It absolutely defines him.
Yeah.
A couple of people have given up their time slots this afternoon. Modular Systems, as well as The Goods, in order for us to be able to do this extended broadcast. And one of the co-hosts of The Goods is here, Andy Williams. And Andy just had a few thoughts about Len. I'm sorry that it's so crammed at the end here, but...
That's all right.
Go ahead if you had a good Len story, or maybe you encountered him.
It's not a good Len story. It's just that I got to pay tribute to this man, because when I first came here as an import from Toronto in 1994... Len was one of the first people I met, actually, and I always remain a jazz head, but I'm also into disc jockeying, as you know, like playing dance floor music. But I'd always have these interesting conversations with Len, and I, for one thing, I was amazed by his memory. I was very impressed with that.
Here goes the nods again.
Yeah.
I'd be on the radio, and you know, with Sean Moore, as you know, Sean Moore and I,
yes.
we're avid jazz listeners, and we. You know, we're trying to collect 10,000 records in probably 3 years of every jazz thing we could find in the city. And sometimes we'd make mistakes on the radio. You know, we'd say, well, you just heard a track by Dexter Gordon in 1946. And then the phone would ring. And it'd be Len Dobbin. And he'd be, well, Andy, that was 1945. You know, so.
I was saying he's got a bit of the Phil Shapp thing happening there.
Yeah. So, I got to know him quite well, and then. I remember once we had this great little walk with Sheila Jordan. I was just going down to Tyndall St. George, and I was the educational coordinator at the time down at Tyndall. So it was my lunch break, and I ran into both of them, and those two were chatting like they're like on Coronation Street, but it was all about jazz.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah, and you know, I was like, man, this guy really loves. I thought I was a jazz lover. I thought, you know. But when I listened to those two talk, and you know, and I was out of the picture. I was like the third wheel. But it was just so good being in that. You know, it was like
I think it inspires us to listen more and to constantly pursue more.
It was just like one of these great portals to be in. It's like being Len Dobbin, as opposed to being John Malkovich. It was just like I was a fly on the wall. So I remember one time I went to his house, and you know, as you guys know, the records were also part of the furniture. And he'd just pull stuff out, and we'd just talk and listen to it. And I was just questioning myself about late modern jazz early. So I got a quick lesson in probably about 45 minutes on what jazz really is. So I was like, oh, you know what? I better go back to the books. I better stop picking up my books. And if I'm going to do this radio show properly, I'm going to do it right. So what I'm getting at is that this guy was so... well refined in his jazz, even down to his sheets, as we all know, were proper. And hats off to him. He's going to be sadly missed. And you know, rest in peace.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks.
I appreciate it, and we appreciate having the time to stretch out here. Yeah. Your thoughts are really beautiful, right. And I, a lot of nodding here. We all understand. Right.
What is there to write? What is there to say? Same things happen every day. Not a thing to write, not a thing to say. So I take my pen in hand and start the same old way. Dear, I thought I'd drop a line. cool. The folks are fine. I'm in bed each night at 9 P.S. I love you. Yesterday we had some rain. Was it dusty on the train? P.S. I love you. Right to the Browns just as soon as you're able. They came around to call. Nothing left for me to say, and so I'll close. But by the way, everybody's thinking of you. Yes, I love you. Just as soon as you're able, they came around to call. I burned a hole in the dining room table, and let me see, I guess that's all. Nothing left to tell you, dear, except each day seems like a year. Every night I'm thinking of you.
Dorothy Berryman with the title track from her album P.S. I Love You, featuring Greg Clayton on guitar, Eric Harding on piano, Dave Watts on bass, and Camille Bellil on drums. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This is the 737th edition, memorial edition of Dobbin's Den. Our final guests this afternoon are three people that are incredibly close to Len. Monique Fauteuil and Dorothy Berryman, And Joel, and I forget how to say your last name.
Gibrovich.
Monsieur Gibrovich.
Gibrovich.
These are three really crucial people in Len's life. And earlier on in the afternoon, people gathered over at Upstairs, which Joel manages and runs and owns, and discussed with Len's family how to send Len out in style with one concrete idea as opposed to perhaps numerous different tributes. So we're going to talk briefly about perhaps what was gained from that meeting, but perhaps you'd like to talk and just...
I have a question.
Have
I have a question for Joel.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Have you got the nameplate for Len's chair made?
Or we've actually talked about it, and we're working on it right now. And you know, Len is Len. You know, we've been talking with his three daughters, and he's this public figure, and he's someone that is so well known, and the family really needs time to grieve, and I think a lot of his very close personal friends need time to grieve. And then you have the other side of Len that, everyone just wants to know what's going on and show their support. And I think it's a little bit difficult because you have to react so quickly to people, and people, everyone is mourning. I think that the amazing thing about this is that, I mean, I just miss him. Like, I miss him already. And I just think that, he was so present in my life for the last 14 years. I saw him pretty much every day, I would say, and he was his home. He would walk into Upstairs and, "Hey, Len, how you doing?" And, he'd, have his usual food and just hang out. And, he'd always clear his own plate. He never wanted us to serve him. It was his home. It wasn't anything like other
his
than
living
that.
Room. He put up his feet and relaxed and took it upon as his own.
Yeah, and I know, Len's, friend to jazz, and, he's this encyclopedia of knowledge, and he's just, but for me also, it was so beyond that. It was just this, like, close, personal friend that, I didn't imagine my life without him. I thought he was kind of going to be around forever. I never really thought of his mortality, and, last year he was obviously not feeling well, and I still didn't think about it. I still knew he would get through it. I don't know why. And this time when it happened, I just knew. I knew he wouldn't. And it's just, it's a shock, And, I miss him incredibly. And I think that, the only thing that I can really, I'm just happy that, it happened with us around, and with his friends and family around, and at his favorite bar stool, getting ready to listen to music. And I'm happy that my hands were around him and taking care of him, because,
we're here with, there's three people here that saw Len in his last moments. It's, we're very lucky to have you here. Would you want to briefly allude to anything that was, that developed this afternoon regarding the memorial?
Well,
should we hold off on that? It's up to you.
Well, I think that, for me personally, obviously.
I should say celebration, really. I don't mean memorial, as it's going to be fun, and there'll be plenty of people there.
Well, for me personally, I think that, Len's family wants to have a celebration, and one night of a celebration. And obviously, for me, Upstairs is obviously too small. So we got together with the family, and we were actually listening to your, to this last show. And, Andre Menard from the Jazz Festival was there, and obviously the three kids and all of us. And, the memorial the celebration will actually be on Sunday, August 9th. And we're actually going to do kind of a two-tier thing, because more details about that will be released tomorrow at the Jazz Festival press conference. And then around his birthday, which is February 23rd, What we're going to do is we're going to have a festival to celebrate Len's friends at Upstairs.
Beautiful.
So,
I'm shivering.
Yeah, it's just, that feels, the right way to do it. So, you know, in February, you know, we'll obviously present series and, you know, all work on that together, I think. And, you know, his seat will be there and it won't be empty because he's going to be there, you know, and he's going to be listening and, you know, he's going to have his coffee and he's going to, you know, be listening and tapping his feet. And, you know, that'll be a really great way to celebrate Len.
Our other guest in the studio is Monique Fauteux. And Monique and I met through Len, carting boxes and helping him out. And I was always amazed at all the people that would come through for him and help him out. And he waxed poetic so much about your vocal stylings. And I just thought maybe you'd like to share a few thoughts about Len and say whatever you like.
He was really generous in that regard, I would say, really, and very, very encouraging. Very, he liked to promote if something was happening. He often spoke here on the show of upcoming events, whether it upstairs or you know, anywhere else regarding music. And where I was concerned, but I learned so much from him just sitting at the bar at upstairs and traveling with him. We traveled to with Dorothy as well. We traveled.
This is what I wanted to hear about. Maybe just
Burlington,
a brief thing about
Vermont,
seeing a show with him.
Yes. Oh, how wonderful! And also, we were mentioning something about sometimes being a little shy of going backstage, and and Len, if you said you knew somebody up there, he would say, "Oh yes, okay. Come with me."
Yeah.
And I had been part of a workshop and musicians working with Diane Reeves in a concert in Burlington were putting their instruments away, basically. And he said, "Come on," he says, "you know them. Let's go backstage." And I said, "Oh, I don't know." He finally made his way. He made our way through there, and we went and spoke with everyone, and it was just so delightful. And he was just like a person who opened that door, but with a very une délicatesse. Very great respect and
sensitivity
and I would say, exactly. Mm-hmm. And
diplomacy.
Also, yeah, very, very much so. And he sensed if you were a person who was maybe shy to do that, or and he would help you along the way. And yeah.
Any music or discoveries that you can link directly to him, artists that you might have discovered or never known about, a song that just stays?
There are too many. As the gentleman who spoke earlier...
There'd be a disc ready for you every Tuesday.
I thought I knew a little bit, you know, about jazz, but finally I discovered a hole, like, you know, a point of the iceberg, as we'd say. There was so much more that I wasn't aware of, and so many people from here also that I didn't know all that well, and I'm just so happy to have discovered them. And also a cousin, Jean Limburner, who spoke earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We are cousins, and I had no idea that Len and him knew each other for all these years with the New Jazz Society, the Eminon, and yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and he invited me graciously to be part of their meetings, which I thought was really, really something else.
I think that's interesting because Len, you met Len, and all of a sudden everything just multiplied, and we all met each other. I mean,
mm-hmm.
many
yeah.
people met
mm-hmm.
through that, and mm-hmm. I mean I think that's wonderful. Someone bringing people together, common interests, and just that enthusiasm. I still remark on his enthusiasm for music, and it was boyish and. People retire at 65. They do nothing after. He went to the end, and he could have been 90 and he would have done that. He never lost that. And I think that's
wonderful. We saw three shows a day at the festival.
Yeah.
Every year and till the end.
Yeah.
But at this, you know what? Everybody
talks
about...
Just for our listeners, this is Dorothy Berryman.
Oh, I'm
speaking.
Sorry.
That's okay. Welcome to the show. No, I wanted to make sure people knew who it was.
Yeah. No, but everybody talks about how deep his knowledge was. But another quality that impressed me was when you asked him something and he didn't know the answer, he said, "I don't know." And I thought that was wonderful. He didn't pretend to know everything either,
no.
You know, and he never answered when he wasn't sure of the answer.
Right.
So that was a great quality. And another thing about going backstage, since we weren't able to see all the shows we were planning to see this year at the festival, Len and I, for the last shows where I was supposed to go with Len, I invited Monique to come with me.
Yes.
And we saw the Newport All-Star Stars, George Ween's Newport All Stars, together. And I mentioned to Monique after the show, Len would so much want to be here because Lou Tabakan, the sax player, was also a friend of Pepper's and of Len's. And after the show, I said to Monique, you know, I'm too shy to go backstage. And Monique said, come on, I'll be your Len tonight. So she takes me backstage. We go meet Lou Tabakan, and it happens that he doesn't know how to get out of Place des Arts, and there's so many people there that he needs to know the way underground. So we decided to escort him to his hotel. And we're going up this elevator and this escalator, and I tell Monique and Lou, because, oh yes, I should have prefaced this, Len always called Monique and I his guardian angels. Oh, so beautiful. we're in the escalator, and it dawns on me that Len had just sent us on a mission, you know, to help Lou Tabakan to get back to his hotel.
Very nice.
I thought that was so... It was, and we got apropos. The great, 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 great gift,
yes,
to be there, you know, till his last breath.
Yes.
That's something that I can't, you know, I'm very, very grateful of. I you know, that we were there with the daughters and with Joel and with Monique until the last moment.
Yeah.
Because even though he was clinically dead, I know he knew. And he gave us that gift.
Could you briefly tell me about the first time you met Len and how you got to know each other?
Oh boy, oh boy. I think the first time, it's because we didn't always agree on that story, but for me, I'll have to tell my side of the story.
I'm going to be one person.
But we met at a press conference at the Jazz Festival. That's the first time I was aware of him. And he'd found my first CD lost at the Mirror. And he was attracted first by the picture, he tells me. And then the fact that there were songs that people didn't do very often attracted him, you know, like You Fascinate Me So and stuff like that. So that's how he listened to it. And then he came to see shows. And then we got to know each other outside of the professional realm. And we started, you know, hanging together and seeing shows and traveling together. And the first time we traveled together, actually, was to see Sheila Jordan in New York for her birthday. She
right.
was playing the Jazz
the
Standard.
Birthday, I think it was.
Eh?
Was her 80th birthday, was
75th?
It?
75th,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
That must be
yeah. And we went to Ottawa together, to Burlington, to Tanglewood also with Monique. And,
right.
But during those years, it was like a continuous conversation that we had. I loved to talk with Len.
Just like musicians playing together, a conversation.
Yes.
That's very nice.
You know, and it happened every day, and it happened through internet and telephone, or when we'd go have lunch together. And when Espace Musique offered me to host a jazz show, and that was about, I think, 3 years after meeting Len, I thought that I couldn't do it without him. You know, it would just be that conversation that we'd been having since the beginning that we would still have. It was natural. It was real. It was working with a researcher, but it was in real life. It was what we did together anyway, you know? So it was fun. And Len listened to every show I did. He told me when he was happy with them. He told me when he wasn't. Mm-hmm. Too much bossa nova. And he was happy when sometimes I played music that he didn't know of. And, you know, we had a lot of exchanges. And, oh, that song has a verse? Yeah, it does. You were proud when you knew something he didn't.
Dorothy, could I interject? I remember being at Upstairs one night, and just after he'd started working with you or working on the show, and he told me about getting a paycheck.
Oh.
And he was like a little boy. He was like... Like somebody has given me like a source of free candy forever, because he would have done the work for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he loved the music and he loved the person he was working for.
Yeah.
That was enough. That was enough of a reward for him to be doing it. And then he told me, I remember he saying, so I got this, he said, I got this check from the CBC and I asked Dorothy, he said, what's this all about? And she said, well, it's for working on the show. And he said, it's like for a month. And she says, no, it's for a week. And you know, when I think about Len, I only know him, and you know, like you, in recent years, and he, you know very well that he regarded every day of his sobriety in the last 10 years as a gift, and all of the wonderful things that happened to him, and I know that you guys, the three of you, Joel and
Monique.
Monique and Dorothy, were all a huge part of that, and you know. That was always for sure. That was always 100% clear, you know. But just that enthusiasm. He, you know, all of the rewards, whatever financial rewards, were just, that was gravy. That didn't really,
yes,
you know,
was,
that was not
it was
what it
friendship.
Was all about. It was the friendship. It was the relationships. It was the music
sharing.
And the love and sharing the knowledge and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How did you two meet?
Len,
I'm talking to Monique
said
and to
this
Dorothy
on his show,
here.
That we shared the same vocal teacher.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true, Lucette.
A great woman.
Yes, wonderful woman.
Yes, and he often said that, I think, on his show as well, because he spoke of your show, and he would also mention if he played a song from... I had like a little demo that he played a couple of times, songs from that little demo, and I thought that was just great of him to be able to do that as well. And he would tie us in together with Lucette. But I had met Len after Skip Bay passed away. There was a launch of a CD that he had recorded at Quartier Latin.
Yes.
And I had taken care of sending out things for the press, and he was at the door, and we just started talking in the doorway. About Cole Porter. Then we talked about Dorothy, actually, and yes, he did like the picture on the CD. I can still hear him saying, "Beautiful, beautiful woman, nice selection of songs," and that's how we got started. That's how we got started. It was snowing outside. We were in
very
the doorway.
Good taste.
And yes, and we just got talking about music. And he said, "You know, I you're interested in Cole Porter." And he said, "I could introduce you to some songs that maybe not many people know." And he came. We actually met after that for coffee. And he had a CD already with all kinds of titles that I had never, most of them I'd never heard of. And it was written. What was written? Hang on, because I've got it here.
Oh, wonderful.
I think it was written Obscure. The Obscure Cole Porter, and on that was one of his favorite songs, Down in the Depths. And he talked about that song, and I said, maybe we could do that one day. So anyway, he was really inspiring for that.
Joel, I think you wanted to say something there.
I just want to also say that, you know, one of the things about Len and a tribute to Len is that we've had the opportunity to hang out with his three daughters, you know, of recent. And I think that if you want to look at the measure of a man and as much as a contribution he gave to the jazz world, he's got an incredible three daughters. I mean, they're just incredible, different and just wonderful people. And, you know, they're mourning and they're hurting right now. Yet, you know, they're coming together as a family. And I think it's a real tribute to the father to see what amazing daughters he has. And I think that, you know, I just think, you know, just to show you what even more of an incredible human being this person was, you don't have to look far, just look at the kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they mentioned too, since his move from Montreal to the South Shore, that that bond grew, and he became even more important for them. I'm just going to take a quick minute here because we're almost out of time, but I'm going to run through the thank yous before we play our last track here so that it's not too rushed an affair. Thank yous go out to Joel Miller, Christine Jensen, Dave Rishpan, John Limber, Andy Williams, Dorothy, of course, and Monique and Joel, David Beckett, Louise Burns, Mike Chamberlain, my co-host today, Noel Thomas, who came in with a wonderful interview, Rufo Valencia, who is behind me, I think, Steve Amaro, Mike Regenstrief, who came in with some beautiful stories, AJ Cornell, who is the music librarian, and of course, our tech today, Chris Hand, who does need a hand because he really pulled it together. Thanks to all of you for making this a wonderful broadcast. Everything just seemed to happen in a very sublime way, and people just floated in, and I can't believe we're doing this.
Yeah, like I've said over and over again, I'm honored and privileged to be here today.
Yeah.
And to be able to participate in this and share these stories about a really wonderful person. And You know, at the end of every show, Len always thanked Bill W. Personal thanks to Bill W. And but I also want to say a personal thanks to Len for everything that he shared with all of us over the years. It's just there's words can't express it enough.
Have we got 10 minutes or 10 minutes total before the song? 10
minutes before the song.
10 minutes before the song.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think as we want to close with The Crossing by Sheila Jordan, perhaps we could hear from Monique and Dorothy and Joel and your observations on the significance of this tune to Len Dobbin. Would you like to start, Monique?
The significance of the song?
To Len. Yeah,
to
The
Len?
Crossing. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It must have been a deep, overwhelming feeling for sure, because I think he and Sheila shared being part of AA. And it just meant being, for me, hearing it go by, I think the music is such a healer. Music is such a something that brings people together, that I think that was the main focus was on that aspect, I would think, because her last words are, "The love I feel when I'm singing for you, the spirit of the music moves, sets me free." So I think that's everything happened around that. The music, the love of music, and the way it brings people together, and on many levels, not just professionally, I would think, personally.
Dorothy, any thoughts?
Well, the first time I heard it live with Len, well, it brought me to tears, of course. Len, too, was crying. It was beautiful. Sheila has such a capacity to be... She's such an intimate, real singer. She communicates directly. She talks to you in your ear. I know that's a cliche, but it's true.
Sincere.
She is very, 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 very moving. And present and funny, and you feel very close to her as an audience. And it took me by surprise when I heard The Crossing the first time with Len. I didn't know it would draw such a reaction from me and from Len. And I think that it meant a lot to Len, because he went through many years of drinking and not taking very good care of himself. It's good that, you know, he was very proud of being sober. 15 years, I think
15,
it was.
Yeah.
14.
Almost 14. Well,
almost 14.
And he felt very blessed for the time.
He felt blessed, and I think he felt it through that song. And, of course, Sheila was, as he always said, his favorite jazz singer alive. So that was important, eh, Joel?
Joel, any thoughts?
You know, the joy that he would have whenever Sheila would perform at the club. Len and I would go to the airport, and he was like a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember he was like, you know, he'd always be there, you know, ready before me. Okay, are we going? Are we going? Okay. Mm. And
5 minutes.
I just think that, you know, it's really kind of surreal that in this series during the Jazz Festival that we've had, Sheila performed. Mm-hmm. On Monday night, and I think someone had talked about how Sheila was coming in a day before because they just loved each other, and it was mutual. It wasn't a one-way love. It was extremely mutual between the two of them. And, you know, Sheila came in a day later. Unfortunately, her airplane was canceled, and he was still in good spirits, but all day long he was, like, just, like, walking around and so excited, you know, and he's, like, you know, just so excited. And, you know, to hear The Crossing, for me, I mean, Sheila closes her set. It's usually her encore. And I think, you know, if you were to dig a little bit deeper, you know, it's amazing that Len had the opportunity to see Sheila and hug Sheila and feel Sheila and listen to Sheila singing 2 days mm-hmm. before he passed away. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's pretty unreal.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, The Crossing, obviously, I only knew Len post his alcoholism. You're right, I got to Upstairs April 1995, and I guess he just he just beat it because I only know him sober, and I never even realized. I mean, what a crazy tough thing it is to go through that, to beat that, and to overcome that. And I really never realized it because I never knew his drinking before. And if you can kind of look at the last song that Sheila sang to him, dedicated to him, she dedicates the song to Len Dobbin. The crossing, maybe it was the crossing and time for Len to just cross over, and because I just find, we can dig deep and, look for all these signs and whatnot. But I can tell you that I just think it's not a coincidence that it happened that way. I just think it's the way it was supposed to happen. And I think Len is the one that decided that it was going to happen. And I think that it's a real tribute to him because Len did things on his own terms.
Yep.
No one was going to tell Len what to do. Len did things on his own terms. And I think his presence will live on forever. It won't just live on for a couple of days. I feel him so strongly. And I know that I'm not alone. And it's just unreal how many people feel that way.
Dave Richman had a quick comment.
I just wanted to add something, and this has been sort of something that's been going around the Jazz Fest press room, which is where a lot of us saw Len last, and for me, I think it's only going to sink in next year or once the festival is over, because, Len was omnipresent in the scene. He was everywhere. Every major jazz show I went to, I would probably expect to see Len, And now that he's not in the press room and he's not going to be in his stool at Upstairs, it's been a very surreal hang in the press room ever since we got the news. And Jamie O'Mara at Hour put it really interestingly. He's like, I was sitting at the bar 2 days ago and I was talking to Len, and now I'm looking at a photo of him on the press table in memoriam. And it's the day the news broke, the day everybody found out, it was the weirdest feeling in the press room. Just the strangest feeling. Like, there was this energy missing and this presence missing. And I know for me, it's not going to sink in totally for a while.
Okay. We're just about running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I want to thank everyone that's participated in the show, and have to thank Len for just being such an interesting person, and always being there, and we don't have enough time or words to say it, but I think of him often, and I will say I'm adopting his cat, and I feel very
yes.
lucky. So I can think about Len every time I see the cat.
Right. We're just gonna miss him. We're just all gonna miss him. I think, and every time I listen to a jazz song, I'm gonna think of Len Dobbin.
Yeah.
That's
it for edition 737 of Len's Den. This has been a memorial tribute to the late Len Dobbin. Thanks to everyone who's participated. The station is CKUT 90.3 FM. You can send in your condolences or messages or
I got the number here.
Itself. Stories to our line, and we will have those available as announcements shortly in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, the number is 514-448-4041. The extension is 2547. And Drew, I want to thank you very much.
Thanks, man. It's been great. Thank you very much, and thanks to Chris. This is Sheila Jordan and The Crossing.
There are moments in your lifetime when the whole world seems insane. If you search beyond the madness, there is peace of mind to gain, where there is no time or season, and there is no fear. strain. Take your troubles to the crossing. It's where joy outweighs the pain. Oh, the crossing. Oh, the crossing. It's been known by many names. Some have found it through religion, putting faith in God each day. When your world seems lost, shattered, and your dreams have gone astray, never seek out self-destruction. There's a crossing that can help you find your way. What a blessing it can be when you're feeling down and lonely. There's an answer, there's a key. And for those of you who wonder what the crossing means to me, it's the love I have when I'm singing for you. The spirit of the music sets me free. For my friend Landon.